This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the American Monetary Association's podcast, where we explore how monetary policy impacts the real lives of real people and the action steps necessary to preserve wealth and enhance one's lifestyle.
Peter, are you there?
I'm here and standing by. Can you hear me?
Yes, yes. Great to have you on. So when I read the book Makers by Chris Anderson, one of my favorite authors, a few years back, I was really impressed with the future. He talked mostly about the concept of, 3D printing and how that would revolutionize artisan makers and bring a lot of that manufacturing, that sort of small or artisan or even one-off manufacturing process back to the U.S. and it would shift back from offshore to the U.S. and how I was looking at all the extensions of that, like small industrial properties, even home-based offices that are now just in the information business, maybe being in the manufacturing business in someone's garage or their den. There's just kind of almost to the form of like Etsy, where you can manufacture something custom one at a time or in very small batches. You talk in Maker City, well, the subtitle is A Practical Guide for Reinventing American Cities. And this ties in with the Opportunity Zone discussion, right?
It very much does. The concept really here in Maker City was that economic reinvention was probably going to be a bottom-up thing. Ideas would flow up from cities as people found what they were good at, as innovators came into those cities, as kind of entrepreneurs met up with real estate and economic development people, created innovation centers, created local opportunity. And likely the future was going to be a bunch of connected ideas and experiments that would then lead to where we're going, as opposed to some top-down big idea that came from Lyndon Johnson or the New Deal or Washington. And so if you think about kind of big trends that are going on in the world, this trend towards decentralization and real-time learning and networks is happening very quickly. As Steve Glickman talked to us in another episode that you did, the whole concept behind Opportunity Zones is decentralized local bottom-up community development, because that's where you can run lots of experiments, where ideas can be prototyped. And this is also a very practical thing, because we don't really have top-down, huge HUD-oriented programs anymore. You could argue that the right never really liked that, and the left is learning that it's actually a lot better to run a lot of these experiments. And by the way, decentralization, you see it in utilities. We want more resilience in local utilities because big grids have brittleness. You see it in the emergence of cryptocurrency because you want more local resilient mechanisms. Well, Opportunity Zones as a program is like that. Of course, to do a good job, you need lots of good local ideas, or else you'll get either gentrification or condos. And the concepts behind the Maker City, really two big concepts. One, from the maker world, is this notion that manufacturing can be more customized, that you can actually do things more locally, and that can train people and you can learn from it. So there's a whole kind of continuous learning component to it. And there's also this notion of maker, that you are actually the maker of the city. You're involved. It doesn't just come from City Hall. You have a role. You can create. You can prototype. And that engages more people in planning. And some of the most interesting stuff we're seeing in Opportunity Zones are temporary structures that come up that create value, that local artisans are creating things, they're working with entrepreneurs, that creates value in a part of town that might have been a poor part of town or didn't attract people, and out of that economic development can come. So this is a kind of a localist-based concept that marries up both with making as a distributed way, this economic program, and some of the big trends going on.
Yeah. Well, I have to be very frank. I'm really quite on the shelf about Opportunity Zones. I'm not sure it's going to work. And, I say that for many reasons. Number one, I think there are a lot of fraudsters and hype artists out there promoting funds and getting sucker real estate investors into their funds and their deals. But that's not the program's fault. Okay. There's always going to be shysters, right? That's just, part of fallen human nature. Okay. So that's going to exist anywhere. But it seems to me like the way to fix a lot of these problems is really through skills and motivation of the actual people and the workers. And while the Opportunity Zone may well and probably will, at least to an extent, improve these areas and make the neighborhoods nicer, I don't know that it's going to improve people's brains or their motivation. You know, it's not just a matter of having the skills to work and, and be successful in the new economy. You also got to have the motivation, right? And if they're on the dole and, you know, what, like, what's the incentive to get off of it, right? You can probably tell where my politics are, so forgive me, but don't you think that's sort of the core of the problem?
You're absolutely correct. If this was a program that built nice things and didn't lift up communities, figure out a way to do workforce development and kind of build into the community some sense of lifelong learning, progressive enroll, all you have would be kind of the continually building of things for communities where people didn't care.
And they probably couldn't afford to live in them. So it'd be gentrification problem, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Because if you can't lift up incomes and make people part of the middle class, what do you get? More of the same. Yeah. So this is the essential problem here. So if you get to the core of this, the good news is, oh, it's a lot of private capital. It's an opportunity. It's the possibility of building out the next American frontier. That is to willfully think through, at a time of technical and economic change, what do we need to do? And we could write that down. I'm going to get to that in a moment. Now, that's the good news. The bad news is, if you build a program and you mostly bring in existing real estate investors that are used to particular kind of IRRs, and then they go for kind of the adjacent
That's internal rate of return, a metric of success on
essentially, if you
on
go,
investment.
If you get investors that are used to doing one thing and people putting funds together that want to go build the project with the highest return, you'll get hotels and condos near downtown areas, and you'll leave this thing out. So the tantalizing thing here is, how could you motivate capital or even put some rules around it, guidelines, some set of metrics so that you could define and envision and then fund things with significant change? And that's the tension right now. The articles that you read in the New York Times that say what's going on here are saying it's just more stuff for the rich. On the other side of this, on people who are urbanists and trying to bring about change, our belief is, if you can bring in impact capital that actually wants to make long-term changes, perhaps augment that with certain philanthropic and charitable things that make some of this stuff more successful, a lot can happen. So, for example, a number of foundations, Kresge Foundation and Rockefeller Foundation, Milken has been part of this, the Omidyar Foundation is part of this, have looked at, could we come up with a set of impact guidelines that people could self-report on, and then could charitable foundations guarantee projects or be last money out in a mechanism that could swing things to profitability? And there are projects, for example, there's a project going on in the Midwest right now that's going to buy a big auto parts manufacturer and then also work on building affordable housing in that area. So it's workforce housing for people who are there. There's another project in the Intermountain West, which is a large project that's actually, it's a space that attracts a lot of people for particular amusement participation purposes. The people who pay to go there tend to be from cities, but there's a whole community there that has to commute a lot. You can build housing around that. As we've looked at projects, there's a very interesting thing going on in Fresno that brings all at once a community place where startups can come, training of the kids of essentially agricultural workers in coding, together with investment in that. So what you're doing is you're bringing together people who understand, say, startup and business culture, the sons and daughters of agricultural workers who might never thought they'd have a good job, but now they're being trained for jobs which exist, and it's creating a culture of possibility. So those are examples of things that work well. And one of the reasons we created Lighthouse, the project that Steve and I are working on, is how can we bring capital together to do this? And a lot of Bay Area, think of tech capital, that's capital gains. It's not just interested in the real estate thing. It wants to build a platform that brings about systemic change. So that's where you'd actually start looking at things like training or apprenticeships or new forms of affordability. There are new economic products you can build where you trade off appreciation rights of housing for access rights. So it looks like rental, but the prices don't go up because you have some ownership in it. And you can do this with fractional ownership and blockchain. So there's a set of new ideas to be deployed. And here's the thing. If no one does these, it'll just be a lousy program. So mm-hmm. what there is to do, I think, is take people doing innovative stuff, work together, put some capital in it, and prove things we can do.
Okay. I want to just, as we wrap it up, sort of shout out on a couple of bullet points in your table of contents of your book. Okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, whatever strikes you here, just talk about it for a moment. So building a nation of makers, the maker movement and cities, so mostly urban areas here, right? The open ecosystem concept. We talked about workforce development already, but advanced manufacturing and supply chain, what's there? And most of our listeners, very interested in real estate investing. So you have a chapter entitled Real Estate Matters. take what you want there.
So one of the first things to point out is, as we all know, the economy is fundamentally changing. You grew up in a world where you went, you had a job for life, and you did that, and you had a pension. Well, that's changing quickly, and that's disruptive. So from the very earliest stage, training people that they can learn, that they can make, that they can kind of think leanly, that they have a sense for the full cycle of how you create a product, how you might bring it to market, that sense of thinking prepares people for a more lean, kind of always changing workforce environment. It's a way of thinking that moves us away from 20th century into something that is faster paced and kind of reflects where the economy is going. And so it turns out making and producing and being able to create things completely stimulates that. There's also a component of being an author of your city as well. That is co-creating. In San Francisco, when we were redesigning Market Street, we turned it into 50 projects that had students and community developers, architects, all doing short-term prototypes where you could measure and figure out what's going on. That can get translated directly into opportunity zones. CoPlace in San Diego takes parts of town that are poor, such as Chula Vista, where it's basically an impoverished arena, puts in temporary structures that can then put in local businesses tied in with entrepreneurs, but it creates kind of exciting environments. There's art, there's commerce, people come there. That drives up the value, which then allows them to go build permanent developments. But now you're bringing the community along and you can make it more affordable. So this is a form of participatory urbanism that's done by the community, not to the community. And that's essential because, as you know, if you simply have developers come in doing something to a community with gentrification, there'll be resistance. By making everybody a part of this thing, which is this maker mentality, this placemaking mentality, it's much more likely to succeed.
Good stuff. Give out your website.
You can find out about our Opportunity Zone work and see how we're actually bringing capital together to bring about change at lighthouse.one. And if you want to read the book Maker City and see how the maker movement and placemaking can be transformational, take a look at us at makercity.com. And on that site, you'll see a bunch of videos and examples. You can also download the book and see how this can be transformative.
Fantastic. I want to ask, I didn't ask you this before. Do you run an Opportunity Zone fund? Is that what Lighthouse does, or part of what it does?
We built Lighthouse more as a matching mechanism. We kind of thought at the very beginning it would be unlikely to just get a pile of money and have your investors not know what they're investing in, because our observation is people want to know what projects. So what we're doing is we're creating special purpose funds around each project, and we're also trying to talk to a wider form of capital than just real estate capital, because we're interested in starting businesses. Don't forget, if you start a business in an Opportunity Zone, the founders who invest in it and the investors, if it's there for 10 years, it can get huge and you'd never have to pay capital gains.
Yeah.
So we're interested in a wider capital type and particular projects as opposed to a single big blind fund.
Right. But the answer is you do run funds then, multiple funds.
We run multiple funds,
yeah, right. Okay.
And we basically create them on a case-by-case basis for each project. And that's partly because Opportunity Zones require a fund as an investment mechanism. So we have to synthesize a fund for each project.
Right. And so you're in the business of raising capital for these funds, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Good stuff. All right. Well, hey, thanks for joining us. And we appreciate learning more on this from both you and your associate.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guest opinions are their own. And if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.